John Casey's a philosopher and literary scholar at Cambridge University in England. He's written many books. His latest is called After Lives, A Guide to Heaven, Hell, and Purgatory. Casey told Steve Paulson that while the afterlife is a huge idea in both Christian and Muslim traditions, it does not seem to be especially important for today's Jews.
No, interestingly, it doesn't, does it? Yet if you go back to the Pharisees and Jesus, they did believe in something like, and Jesus obviously preaches an afterlife which was adopted by Christians, and it seems the Pharisees believed in something very similar. But yes, among today's Jews, the idea of an afterlife is much vaguer, it would seem, than it is among Christians and Muslims.
How do you explain that?
I don't really know how to explain it. In a way, I would say it's a return to the most ancient traditions in Judaism. Of course, it has been argued by recent Jewish scholars that the break between ancient Judaism and the Judaism of the time of Jesus and just before isn't as great as has been suggested. It has been suggested by some modern Jewish scholars that the most virtuous of the patriarchs don't go down into Sheol, into the pit, in the way that wicked people do. That is to say, they live on in the memory of their people. They live on in the memory of the Jewish people and are described as being gathered into Abraham, gathered into Abraham's bosom. And there is a suggestion that the power of God has some sort of existence, even in the afterlife, and that there is a bit of differentiation between those who will live forever in the hearts of the Jewish people and those who are not virtuous, who really are in the underworld. But still, the ancient Jews didn't believe in bodily resurrection in the way that Christians and Muslims have done.
How would you say the vision of hell differs among the three Abrahamic religions?
Well, I don't think the vision of hell itself differs so very much. And certainly between Christians and Muslims, I wouldn't say there's a great difference. I mean, there's a great difference in the colourful details. I mean, Muslims are very interested in the immediate judgment of the dead person in the grave. I mean, they have two angels which come and interrogate him in the grave as to his faith and his works. Does he have faith in Allah and the Prophet? And has he lived a virtuous life? And he's virtually judged then and there. And then there are all sorts of details about hell. There's this very narrow bridge that you have to cross over the flames of hell, led by the Prophet. And for those who are virtuous, the bridge will be quite wide. For those who are wicked, the bridge will be as narrow as a razor blade, and they will fall off on either side. There are all those details, but the difference, I would say, the great difference between them isn't the details about hell and its character. It's that Muslims and Jews, of course, do not believe in original sin. Therefore, there isn't the idea of being predestined to hell the way there is in Christianity, even though, of course, Muslims do believe that everything that happens is decided by Allah. There isn't a doctrine of original sin and human nature being depraved and therefore one being predestined to hell that exists in many sorts of Orthodox Christianity.
Is sin itself a particularly Christian idea?
I would have said not. I would have said sin in Christianity is absolutely continuous from the idea of sin in the Old Testament, in the Jewish Bible, Hebrew Bible. And the Muslim idea of sin is very similar to the Christian and Jewish idea of sin, except the Christian idea of total depravity, that we are born totally depraved and we need a redeemer whose atonement will make it possible for us to achieve heaven, achieve some sort of goodness that we cannot achieve moral goodness on our own, is peculiarly Christian, I would say. I remember there was a heresy called Pelagianism attacked by St. Augustine, and Pelagius, who was a Romano-British monk, taught precisely that man was capable of achieving the good through the efforts of his own will, whereas St. Augustine taught that the will is intimately depraved and we are incapable without grace of achieving any good on our own. Therefore, of course, without grace, without the atonement, everyone would go to hell. And that is something you don't find in Islam at all, or I think in Judaism.
So given the age that we live in now, particularly in the West, sort of the scientific age and relatively secular era, do you think it still makes sense to talk about the afterlife? I mean, is this a concept that still holds water?
Well, I suppose you could argue that we are programmed, to use that fashionable word, in some way to think about the afterlife. But could one put it this way? insofar as cultures have had an absolute sense of good against evil, I think they've been very, very inclined to think there must be judgment, justice, punishment, reward, and an afterlife. In contemporary Western culture, perhaps especially European culture, where there's much less tendency to think that wickedness actually exists, that therefore has to be punishment and justice, a great tendency to feel horror at the idea, as Nietzsche put it, of punishment as an end in itself, which for sure all the ancients believed in and most of the great religious teachers have believed in, then this disposition to look to an afterlife, I think, gets significantly weaker. In other words, I'm not inclined to think that the weakening of belief in afterlife is to do with some intellectual or spiritual advance. It's much more a function of the attitude we take to ethics and to punishment itself.
You're suggesting that our ethical system is maybe less bound to religion now than it was a few centuries ago.
Or another way of putting it is, because ethical beliefs are somewhat less vivid and certainly not absolute in the way they've been in some cultures, religion isn't a very natural way of expressing these beliefs, or they don't find religion as a culmination of the imagination that goes with these beliefs. If we go back to the ancient Egyptians, their beliefs are extremely different from those of the Judeo-Christian religions, but they had an equally vivid notion that life in this world is such a drama, the life in this world. It's such a vivid thing, it's so wonderful, that one wants to prolong it in the next world, but that depends upon one living up to all the possibilities offered to human beings in this world. And the Egyptians, of course, didn't believe in things like original sin, but they did certainly believe in sin, but it was the sin of not living according to all the possibilities offered by the sacred land of Egypt, you might say.
And it would seem that modern ideas about heaven still carry more weight than those about hell. In fact, you cite a Gallup poll in which 71% of Americans say they believe in heaven, but only 53% say they believe in hell.
When you say only 53%, if you were to ask in England or France, it would be about
that would be a very high 5%. Number.
And by the way, I think the French Catholic bishops have actually denied that hell exists in the traditional sense.
So, but for whatever reason, at least among Americans, hell just isn't as popular as heaven anymore.
No, but do we need to ask why? Well, you're an optimistic nation, I think.
What do you believe yourself?
Oh, I think I believe what I've got in the book, which is that it's something one should take very seriously indeed. If you also want to know what I believe, I'm also torn between that and the ancient Greek and Roman idea that true immortality is an immortality of memory in the minds of other people.
Hmm. You end your book with the sentence, "Our image of heaven and hell is finally an image of how we judge ourselves." Can you explain what you mean?
Yes. I think I quoted Nietzsche at that point, where Nietzsche said, I can actually quote it, "There comes a point of morbid mellowing and over-tenderness in the history of society, which it takes aside even of him who harms it, the criminal, and does so honestly and wholeheartedly. Punishment, that seems to it somehow unfair. Certainly the idea of being punished. Why punish him as well? To administer punishment is itself dreadful." And I think Nietzsche thought that these changes in consciousness, which went with the death of God, are really a sort of weakening of the will, that to not be willing to impose justice isn't necessarily an advance towards enlightenment. It's a sort of scepticism of the will, a giving up of confidence in one's own values. And in that sense, I would say that a true belief in an afterlife, in the way that Christians and Muslims and Jews, perhaps not to such an explicit degree, have believed in, or the ancient Egyptians believed in, very much depends upon there not being this, as he put it, morbid mellowing. And insofar as our society is much less ethically conservative than, say, Islamic society, I would say that beliefs in heaven and hell are naturally much more alive and vivid, much more real assent is given to them in Islamic countries than in the West, certainly than in the European West.
John Casey is the author of After Lives, A Guide to Heaven, Hell, and Purgatory. He spoke with Steve Paulson.